Blog Talk Radio.
I can keep on hiding, but I can't reach the surface. Everybody's living different, I just can't compare. Too much left to bottle, took another shot of pushing it up, but I can't find a way to know.
I'm stuck, it's practice every month. I don't really ask for much. I just need to touch. Climb in this hole. I don't wanna watch it go.
No, I don't wanna watch it.
They just tell me.
Tell me why I feel so stuck in my mind, but it's nothing. I can't change, no, I won't do it for no one. Driving, see you passing by. I just think that I deserve some change.
Hello and welcome to Sports Camp. Your host, Sean Breyer, the King. Today I'm going to discuss the hottest topics in sports. I'm going to debate on the hottest topics in sports. So if you want to call in, the number to the show is 516-418-5906. Again, 516-418-5906. You can chat up in the chat room while it's open. Email to the show is skbtradio@gmail.com. And without further ado, let's first begin with the first topic. Is Carlos Alcaraz the best men's tennis player in the world? Well, Carlos had a tremendous year last year. He won multiple tournaments, finished number one in the tennis player rankings. He went on to become the youngest player ever to end the year off as the number one tennis player in the world. The question is he the best men's tennis player in the world? Well, I think if he could continue his success, he very well has the possibility of becoming the best tennis player in the world. The Spaniard is just 19 years old and has a bright future ahead of him. The only hiccup last year was missing out on Paris, a tournament in Paris, and then the Australian Open, which is going on right now. But you look at other players right now, such as Novak Djokovic, Rafael Nadal, and others. Novak Djokovic, first of all, is returning to the Australia for the first time since being banned, all due to denying the COVID-19 vaccine. And he has done so well so far good for the Australian Open. As for Rafael Nadal, he was just eliminated by McDonald. McDonald, as you may know, won the NCAA championship last year and is now on the cusp of possibly winning the Australian Open after winning against Rafael Nadal. Nadal, real with injuries, just like Roger Federer. Those two have been legends to sport of hockey, of tennis, but with their injuries, it's sort of put Rafael Nadal in a backseat, Roger Federer in a retirement seat, and Novak Djokovic in the poker seat right now. He's playing all his chips correctly and is doing well so far. I consider Novak Djokovic the number one player in the world, even though Ron O'Sullivan, who happens to be one of the most famous European competitors out there, sport competitors out there, he recently said that he'd say Alcaraz's pedigree is similar to Novak Djokovic, Roger Federer, and Rafael Nadal. His pedigree is as good as them, and I certainly agree with him. Carlos has the arsenal, the forehand, backhand tools to be the best player in the world if you break it all down. He's like a Juan Soto of tennis. Juan Soto, at a very early age, began his nationals career and took the baseball world by storm and won a World Series for the Nationals back in 2018. And you take a look at where he's at now in his career and where Carlos Alcaraz is now in his career. I think Carlos has only just begun the beginning of a well-storied career. Who has the best MLB starting lineup? Well, if I had to say, I'd probably say the Dodgers. I've always been high on the Dodgers lineup when you include Freddie Freeman, Gavin Lux, Smith. They're going to be without Justin Turner, but I still think even with the new trade of Miguel Rojas, I think their defense is spectacular and they have what it takes to contend for a World Series again. You also put the Mets up there after all their moves, despite of Carlos Correa leaving the New York Mets high and dry. Carlos Correa, if you don't know by now, left not only the New York Mets high and dry, but as well as the San Francisco Giants, and now he's part of the Minnesota Twins. The Twins were able to restructure his contract and get him in to their lineup for a deal well north of $200 million. So as it turned out, even though Carlos Correa didn't get the big paycheck he wanted in San Francisco or New York, he signed back with Minnesota. I digress, though. The New York Mets, I think, after Pete Alonso's statement that this is big things are to come pretty much for New York Mets, I certainly still believe that with guys like Pete Alonso himself. Francisco Alvarez set to debut in Major League Baseball, the number one overall prospect, according to MajorLeagueBaseball.com, MLB.com, in short. And you also look at Starling Marte, Francisco Lindor. Hopefully, I think those two will have bounce-back seasons. So I'd say the Mets, Dodgers are up there. Did the Yankees do anything to bolster their lineup? Well, they have Aaron Judge again. They re-signed Aaron Judge, and he is now the captain. I would just play that clip right now from the captain featuring Tom Hanks, but don't have it on me right now. Although Aaron Judge, I think, has some good talent around him, such as Anthony Rizzo. There is a lot of speculation about Oswaldo Cabrera starting again for the New York Yankees. The Yankees figure they could very well put in a trade for a different left fielder. But nonetheless, I think it's a solid lineup overall that can possibly make a move or two down the line, The Yankees did, in fact, bring back Brian Cashman and Brian Sabian. Brian Sabian, a former scout in the Yankees organization when he first began the 80s in Major League Baseball and went on to famously take the Giants to multiple World Series and now return to the New York Yankees. I think the Yankees, they have a good lineup, and they have the right front office personnel to possibly lead them on the better and bigger things ahead around Aaron Judge. You take a look at other lineups. The Phillies added Trey Turner to their lineup pretty much, and bring back guys like Rhys Hoskins for one more year. Most definitely Bryce Harper. Alluding back to Rhys Hoskins for a sec, everyone remembers him spiking the bat in the MLB playoffs and send the Phillies on to the next round. He signed for arbitration, 1 year, $12 million. I'd say him, Bryson Stott, and Johan Rojas, if he ever decides to take a leap forward and get the call up to Major League Baseball, I think those three shall improve, or else you could very well see some big changes being made by Dave Dombrowski, of course. I wouldn't necessarily say the Phillies have the best MLB starting lineup, considering what I just mentioned, or who I just mentioned, Rhys Hoskins. I've always had a hot and cold relationship with. I think maybe next year will be a year we won't forget for ages to come with Rhys Hoskins. Maybe Rhys Hoskins plays his heart out next year for the Philadelphia Phillies, but time will tell about the Dodgers, the Mets, the Yankees, Phillies, the Cubs. The Cubs, they added Trey Mancini on a 2-year deal. Mancini, a cancer survivor, fighter, and worshipper of baseball. He signed a 2-year deal with the Chicago Cubs. The Cubs, I think, have a pretty decent lineup when you include Dansby Swanson, Christopher Morel, who I think is going to have a bounce back, terrific year, Horner, and Cody Bellinger. That's the one weak spot there. Maybe Bellinger will provide some assistance next year. Maybe not. He may very well be. I think he's better than Jock Peterson. Peterson has come back from the dead and proved to be a hot commodity in anyone's lineup, clubhouse, per se. Bellinger, he's going to have to definitely provide some assistance if he's going to be on a Major League Baseball team going forward. I think this next year's the year we see Cody Bellinger very well blossom into that MVP-esque player we saw before. Pirates, they also signed a player, guy you may very well be familiar of, Andrew McCutchen. Should ring an alarm for many Pirate fans out there. If I had to say who's my favorite Pirates player, it's probably Jason Kendall. I remember when Jason Kendall, catcher, the Pittsburgh Pirates, used to go at it, and I thought he was fantastic. Although the Pirates, they did in fact sign back Andrew McCutchen. McCutchen is mid-30s now, has dealt with some injuries throughout his career, mostly lower regions of the body, and he's put on a decent career. He's won MVP before and has taken the Pirates to the playoffs, most memorably back in 2013 to 2015. O'Neill Cruz, he's not so bad of a player. looking at other guys too. I think the Pirates still have Gregory Polanco. So, they have Brian Reynolds. I think the Pirates don't have so bad of a lineup. It's a toss-up who's going to AL Central next year. Although, I'm certainly a fan of those two lineups I just mentioned, the Cubs and Pirates. But tell me what you think. You can call into the show by dialing 516-418-5906. Again, 518-418-5906. I'm your host, Sean Bradley King. Make sure to hit me up on Twitter at JBrySK. Also, find Sports Kim on Twitter, Facebook, Twitch, Instagram, and most of all, YouTube at Sports Kim TV. So we got more time here. Let's get to our next topic. Should the Maple Leafs trade Austin Matthews? This is a loaded question here. Austin Matthews, as most NHL fans should know by now, was the number one overall pick. He was a former number one overall pick back from the 2016 NHL draft. And, man, has he put on quite a show, especially last year when he scored 60 goals. You may help me out in the chat room. I think it was 2016 or 2015. It was one of those years Austin Matthews was drafted first overall. But regardless, he's had a pretty good career in Toronto. Question is, should the Maple Leafs trade him? I think the answer is no. If the Maple Leafs can, in fact, get a really, really good goaltender for Austin Matthews, I wouldn't push the button on Austin Matthews too soon. I think he's that valuable of a talent with the Maple Leafs, even though the Maple Leafs do have a lot of depth. They do have some secondary options, two really good line, top lines, and John Tavares, William Nylander, Mitch Marner. And then you look at goaltending, they have Matt Murray, who won a Stanley Cup in 2014 with the Pittsburgh Penguins all by himself in goal, and then later on tagged in tandem with Marc-Andre Fleury back in 2017. And who was the victor there? I think Marc-Andre Fleury certainly was when he regained time of possession and in hockey and went on to become a sensation with the Vegas Golden Knights, even though the Golden Knights fell short of reaching their goal, which was to win a Stanley Cup final. I don't have much confidence in the tandem of Samsonov and Murray so far. Some people are pleased with the tandem. Some others aren't. The Leafs are second in their division, the Atlantic division, with the Boston Bruins sitting right in front of them. And then behind them are the Tampa Bay Lightning. I would say it's a tough upper echelon division, even when you include the surge of the Buffalo Sabres right now. So maybe there's reason to believe that the Maple Leafs could get a big package in return for Austin Matthews, could stand to add more depth or a really good goaltender. But Austin Matthews is the franchise. He's not the captain, but he's an alternate captain, just like Nylander, Marner, or actually just Nylander himself. And then you include John Tavares, the real captain who, let's face it, has sort of regressed a little bit. His goal scoring rate is not as it once was, and so there's concern to be discussed upon John Tavares and Austin Matthews if he can't reach the 100-point plateau or a 50-goal plateau, right? Or it seems like right now he's on pace to do so, reach 50 goals and over 100 points, but as a Leafs fan, you just like to see him persevere and lead the Maple Leafs to a Stanley Cup final someday, which is what all Toronto fans want, is a Stanley Cup final opportunity after years and years of regression. So I even though it may sound appealing, I think Austin Matthews should stay put right now in Toronto. Is Jason Tatum currently the NBA's most valuable player? Well, you can tweet along hashtag join the debate on Twitter or Facebook. I'll read out your posts and on air and give you my assessment on Jason Tatum. But Jason Tatum, the assessment overall on him is that he just scored 51 points the other night against the Charlotte Hornets and his former teammate Terry Rozier. He went on to have a really good game, one of his best performances of the year the other night, and is playing the Golden State Warriors coming up tomorrow. So ever since Jason Tatum played in the NBA Finals, he has refined his tools, most particularly his shooting tools, and now is shooting his best effective field goal percentage this year, shooting the best from the free throw line, and he's playing the most minutes he's ever played in his career, 36.5 minutes he's averaging this year on record. And shooting the ball tremendously well. He could very well be MVP this year, the NBA's most valuable player right now. But you look at other guys such as Joel Embiid, who I think is playing lights out, has a 40-point game just last night against the Los Angeles Clippers. And by the way, Kawhi Leonard has, I say Kawhi Leonard in a derogatory tone, based off the fact that I can't ever get over the time he beat the 76ers, my 76ers, in the NBA playoffs second round and hit a buzzer beater, which won't ever be forgotten by Sixer fans and some NBA fans in particular. Kawhi Leonard, he had his fifth straight 20-point game. He's certainly on track to possibly contend with this Clippers team, possibly the best Clippers team this year. There's reports that Mike Conley may very well join the Clippers, but that depends on the right value, right assets, right trade. As Mike Conley is with the Utah Jazz as of this moment, the Clippers do have Reggie Jackson and just brought back Paul George as well. So things are looking up for the Clippers, although Joel Embiid, he has 40-point game this year. He's been playing lights out. And then you look at Jokic, he's always playing phenomenal and has his team in first place, currently in first place of the Western Conference. That speaks volumes to the guy Nikola Jokic truly is right now. And then also Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, believe it or not, I think he's arguably playing much better than Ja Morant. I said during one of my hot takes of the day on YouTube recently, which you can find exclusively on YouTube Shorts, our YouTube page, youtube.com/user/sportsKMTV, that he has just been more focused lately on posturizing players when he should really be focused on becoming a better volume scorer, the best Ja Morant he can be, and most of all, a good, very good teammate, a very good passer. Not saying he's not good, but in all those categories, I'm just saying he could be the best Ja Morant if he were to focus more on his on other traits of his game, so to speak, rather than posterize players on ESPN SportsCenter almost every night. So I say that because Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, he's averaging over 30 points per game right now, has the Thunder in the playoff picture, the playoff hunt right now, without Chet Holmgren and a few others, mostly good all-around talent around him. I'll admit, Josh Giddey, he's pretty good. So is Luis Dort. But they're missing a big guy down low, and they certainly could use all the depth they can get. I guess the Thunder will be buyers of the trade deadline, possibly. Who knows? Or sellers if they want to get rid of Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, who, again, is averaging over 30 points per game. He's playing much better than Ja Morant, I believe, and has the makings of leading this Thunder team on to the playoffs. So even though I just mentioned all them players, I still believe Jason Tatum, as of right now, is currently the NBA's most valuable player. If you were to tell me who's going to be the MVP by the end of this year, I think it's very well Joel Embiid. I think it's going to continue to lay it up with a phenomenal playmaker and James Harden. I think the Sixers should trade Tyrese Maxey by now, get shooting depth, add scoring depth, get rid of weaklings such as Furkan Korkmaz, and possibly a couple others such as Matisse Thybulle, who's been rumored to be traded for quite some time. Even though I'm a fan of Matisse Thybulle, I think Thybulle has something that he could bring to the Sixers, which is spectacular defense. Maybe some are concerned that he could very well grow into an Andre Iguodala-type player, but it all goes back to Doc Rivers. Doc Rivers, he doesn't know how to handle younger talent. The Sixers were to just add some veteran depth slash scoring, I think they could very well fix some key holes and become a very, very strong contender out in the East. Although I think Jason Tatum is currently the NBA's most valuable player. We got a couple more topics left with a little time remaining. If you want to call into the overtime show, you can very well do so by dialing 516-418-5906. Again, 516-418-5906. And so with a couple topics remain, we'll move forward to who is AEW's hottest act right now. Well, hang on, let me get a sip of water. I haven't been talking on for 30 straight minutes, and I won't stop. But who is AEW's hottest act right now? I think, even though I've been pleased by the acclaimed, and I think Bowens, in fact, Anthony Bowens, has a really bright future. I think he could possibly very well be Max Caster's lapdog, as Jeff Jarrett was alluding to. But I think he could be a really good wrestler, maybe a franchise player in AEW. You also have Jeff Jarrett, who I just mentioned. He's been phenomenal lately. I think he's having some of the most fun ever in his career right now with Jay Lethal, Sanjay Dutt, and Singh. Those two tag teams have been hot acts, as well as some single stars, such as Jungle Boy, Hook, and a couple others. But if I were to tell you who is AEW's hottest act right now, no, it's not Jeff Jarrett. No, it's not Anthony Bowens. No, it's not Jungle Boy, even though Jungle Boy has probably the best theme music in AEW. I think it's Tony Khan. And Tony Khan doesn't regularly appear on camera. He has recently been on Sammy Guevara's vlog. He's made an appearance before, made a few appearances before on AEW television, most particularly announcing the purchase of ROH. And then you have Tony Khan in the news now talking about buying WWE. And I just think, as we don't have much time left, that Vince McMahon is working all of us. And I hope some of us know that Vince McMahon could very well be working us, because he's back in office now. He's back in Stamford, Connecticut, and he's reportedly run things. And I see it one or two ways, that he could be working us based off the fact that he wants to generate competition, wants to generate hype build to WrestleMania, other events, and most particularly WWE. And I also see it the other way around, that WWE could very well be sold to a Tony Khan or NBC Universal. Like I was talking about on YouTube, you can go back, watch one of my videos exclusively on YouTube. I had gone in depth about WWE sale rumors ongoing, but if I were to say who is AEW's highest act right now, it's without question Tony Khan. The shows, in my opinion, haven't been so good lately, and I think the talk, the speculation, rumors continue to spread online about what Dax Harwood has to say, or CM Punk has to say, or Tony Khan has to say. I think they've all been more interesting lately rather than the in-ring product, which should not be the case. So, final topic: can Sean McVay lead a rebuild in Los Angeles? Well, he has 3 years left on his contract, as well as Les Snead. Les Snead, who's been there for quite a long while, since Jeff Fisher and the days the Rams are still in St. Louis. Both of those guys have 3 years left in Los Angeles, and it's going to prove some that the Rams can't keep forever Aaron Donald. They can't keep Jalen Ramsey forever. They couldn't keep Von Miller forever, which was a hit to their defense this past year. They can't keep some of these guys on offense forever. I think it's absolutely time to rebuild and try to shake things up. Sean McVay was hired at 30 years of age, youngest head coach to ever be hired in the NFL, and he's still got a lot of time left before he wants to go jettisoning off to ESPN as a possible broadcaster. He has plenty of time right now on his hands, I believe, to foreshake a rebuild with the Los Angeles Rams and take them far. I mean, what else legacy would he want to leave? A short legacy such as John Gruden, as he's usually compared to? No, I think he wants to leave a good impression on many Ram fans that he's in the this type of rebuild for the long haul, and that he's going to possibly very well draft a quarterback this year or next year. I'm not so high on most of the quarterbacks this year. I think it's all about fit. With C.J. Stroud, I'm not so high on, but as for Bryce Young, I think with Bryce Young, it's all about a matter of fit. And if he were to go to Los Angeles, I could see him. He plays well in the bright lights, played well in the bright lights at Alabama, spotlight, so to speak, and could see him land a huge gig with the Los Angeles Rams. And you want to talk about some players on defense? Well, you got Jalen Carter, Will Anderson, Jordan Addison, who I believe is the best prospect, best wide receiver prospect in this year's NFL draft. But you go ahead, tell me by hitting me up on Twitter or hashtag join the debate what you think. I've been your host, Jim Brower the King. You can find me on Twitter at JBrowerSK again. And I wish you so long. Before I go, I just want to pay my respects to Jay Briscoe. Rest in peace, Jay Briscoe. It's saddening to hear the passing of the news, but I wish everyone well as it goes for Mark Briscoe and the whole rest of the Briscoe family. My condolences, my thoughts and condolences are with them. So I post breaking news stories on Sports Kingdom's Instagram page. If you want to go find out latest breaking news, some of the latest breaking news on Sports Kingdom's Instagram, go do so by following us at Sports Kingdom TV. And so I want to thank you guys for tuning in, and peace out.